In the new book, The Once and Future Liberal, After Identity Politics, Columbia University professor and public intellectual Mark Lilla offers an impassioned and tough-minded, stinging look at the failure of American liberalism over the past two generations. Lilla expands on the ideas he first outlined in his November 18th op-ed for the New York Times, which ignited a firestorm of controversies. His ideas were lauded by some, including Bernie Sanders, and excoriated by others, with more than 1.5 million views. The piece was the number one ranked political opinion essay of 2016 in the New York Times. Lilla argues that ever since the Democratic Party fell under the spell of identity politics, it has abandoned the contest for the American imagination to the radical right. Mark Lilla is from Detroit. He is a professor of humanities at Columbia University and a regular essayist for the New York Review of Books and other publications. The new book is The Once and Future Liberal After Identity Politics, and we welcome Mark Lilla to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Great to be with you.
What brought you to this particular subject matter and putting these thoughts together in a slim volume?
Well, I was frustrated, like a lot of liberal Democrats, by the election of Donald Trump. But I was especially frustrated right after the election by the conversation about what had gone wrong, which focused very much on the campaign itself, the last few days. And in my view, the problems go back almost 40 years. And so I wrote a quick piece about the role of identity politics in this, the New York Times. It had 1.5 million hits and was the most read political opinion piece in the Times of 2016. So as you can imagine, it was controversial, and I thought I'd expand my ideas in this book.
So when it comes to the election and the conversations that we had immediately following, now that some dust, certainly not all, but some dust has settled, how much do you think is on the candidate and the campaign, and how much is on us, the voters?
Well, I think there's a problem with us as voters, certainly, that so many of us, and nearly half of us, fell for not only a charlatan, but for someone who is manifestly unfit for the office he now holds. But the problem goes deeper. The problem, in my view, also is the inability of the Democratic Party for over 30 years now to put forward a vision of what we share as a country and what we can build together. And one of the reasons for this, one of the main reasons for this, is that they've been mired in the politics of identity, which are very divisive. And you can see, I think we pay too much attention to the presidency. I mean, real power right now is being exercised at the state and local level. Two-thirds of our state legislatures are in Republican hands, two-thirds of the governorship, and half of the states are completely in Republican control. One more, and they could call a constitutional convention. So we've been losing the country for 30 years, and I try to analyze what role identity politics has played in that, what I call the abdication from the contest for the American imagination.
What goes into that contest, and why is our imagination not being fulfilled in some way better than what we have now?
Well, America is a funny country. America is a project. It thinks of itself as a project. Belgians don't think of Belgium as a project. And most countries, they're just countries of countries. But here, we think of ourselves as creating something together. And the most productive, the big changes in our history have come when a party or a leader puts forward a new vision of what that project is. The Democrats had one that ran from the New Deal up until the 1970s, and the Republicans provided a very different picture of our country with Reagan. And in the first, it was all about solidarity and equal rights and working together to support people who might fall behind. In the second vision, it was about getting government off our back and economic growth and really individualism. Now, both of those visions have died. Neither is convincing anymore. So there's a vacuum out there I think the American public is looking for an account of what we are and what the next step in the American project is. And so long as liberal Democrats are mired in identity politics, they're going to be incapable of providing one.
So as you point out in the book, the party now has an opportunity to reset. What do they need to do?
Well, to begin with, they need to, you know, obviously we have elections all the time, and they need to figure out, you know, they're always trying to figure out how to meet the next, you know, the next election cycle. And in fact, it starts this fall for us because two governorships, Virginia and New Jersey, are up for grabs. But somehow the leadership has to pull back and think hard about how to deal with the identity group problem and how to get back to a message that speaks to all Americans. And the point is not to stop talking about minorities and start talking about the white working class. Rather, it means getting back to our principles and articulating them in a way so that whites and minorities and straight people and gay people can see themselves reflected in that message. And that's not been what we've been doing now for, well, ever since Reagan was elected.
And then there is the disarray in the other party, too, of course. Even though they have the power, they are certainly in dire straits. It's certainly, it would seem. So how do both parties really work out a system that is fair and maybe perhaps even resembles a democracy?
Well, first, the parties have to figure out what they're about before they can do anything. I mean, we can talk about particular policies, you know, domestic policies or foreign policy. But to have a governing vision is something else. And Donald Trump really brought to an end the Reagan vision of America, because no one anywhere in the country right now believes that tax cuts are going to solve the problem of Rust Belt towns where no one's working anymore, where people are addicted to opioids, where our schools aren't functioning. The party, the Republican Party, needs to address all of those things. And so the way I see it, it's a tremendous opportunity for us, because our adversary has been, our old Reaganite adversary has been buried by Trump. And now the field is open. And the question is, which party and which ideological formation will offer the vision of the next chapter in our history and which will be able to convince the American people right now?
And because there seems to be this idea of those on the left just waiting for the Trump administration to completely implode. That doesn't work as a strategy, does it?
Exactly. Anti-Trumpism is not a strategy. And, you know, there's a lot of wishful thinking in the party because they don't want to face up to this problem that so much of the country has turned off and that liberal has become a dirty word. So in the last election and the congressional elections before, there were a lot of books written by liberals saying that demographics was going to solve our problem, that because we're going to become a minority white nation, and the false belief that we hold all other groups in our hands, that we could sit on our laurels, just bring out the vote, and not reach out to people in those states that are controlled by Republicans. And Bill Clinton knew that that was a disastrous strategy. Hillary Clinton thought it would work for her. And though she won the votes, clearly she was unsuccessful in reaching at all into those states that are held by Republicans. So we have a big task. And I feel that the Democratic Party doesn't want to look at itself in the mirror and try to analyze why it lost the respect of so many of the, you know, such a large chunk of the Americans.
So let me ask you this question, which is, as we just take a snapshot of what is happening this week or what is happening last week with the president and Charlottesville and many other issues, Afghanistan, anything, have the Democrats been vocal enough? Is this, and I think it's a strategy, although I don't know for sure, of not engaging and not offering, and we saw this even in healthcare, and not offering a positive alternative or any real clear alternative? should they be more vocal?
Well, they had alternatives in the Obama administration, and Republicans would not sit down with them in a good faith way and try to find bipartisan solutions to these things. They simply thought that if they just tried to delegitimize Obama to the point of circulating the lie that he was not an American citizen, Democrats didn't have a partner. And now Republicans control Congress. So there's very little room for Democrats to making their own proposals. And a complicating factor as well is that very little is coming out of the White House administration. They're terribly understaffed. They've been consumed by all these scandals. And it's not as if they're sending policy proposals and legislation to Congress for consideration. I was in Washington not long ago, and everyone's living in a kind of state of suspended animation, waiting to see what's going to happen with the administration before they can even begin discussing the problems that face us.
So let me reframe the question. Do you see glimpses of leadership and the next generation, if you will, of leaders coming up within the Democratic Party?
Well, we have a very short bench, that's for sure. And, you know, it was encouraging to see so many young people energized by Bernie Sanders, and not just young people, but working people around the country. And certainly there's a kind of galvanizing message there. The problem with it is that it's economically totally unrealistic. And Bernie Sanders, God love him, his views about the economy are still stuck in the 1930s. And so what's needed is a progressive program that accepts the realities of the new global economy. And I just don't see anyone there sort of prepared for that. I mean, Joe Biden, I think, gets it. But, you know, we really need to be developing senators and congresspeople who are on message with this. But once again, which is the subject of my book, identity politics is a huge distraction for us.
So what got us into identity politics, and how ultimately do we get out of it?
Well, it, you know, I try to tell the story of how identity politics, as we know, grew out of, you know, the 1960s. Now, at first, movement politics in the 50s and 60s, identity movement politics, were about large classes of people and incorporating them into the country, enfranchising them as citizens. It was about the word we, the great democratic we, and African Americans and women and gays claimed that they were not being included in this we. And so they made a political case for enfranchisement. And they had, you know, they had enormous success with that. What happened later was the development of a more narcissistic identity politics, especially on campuses, where people were dividing themselves into smaller and smaller groups, and also raising doubts about the existence of a democratic we. You know, it's sort of common on campuses to hear that the word we ought to be put in quotation marks because there are only groups and there are only identity groups. And so, you know, there was an attack on the democratic universalism on which this country was founded. And without being able to use the word we, Democrats cannot appeal to the entire country. So a lot of this happened in universities. It was also affected by a kind of narcissism in our culture as well.
And when you think of what happened during the election of 2016, given what we know, does that still make any sense? I mean, can you look at it and say, well, how did we get it so wrong? And does it add up to at least, we may not like the conclusion, but at least on paper, it makes sense.
Well, I would look less at the election to see the connection between identity and politics than to look at what happened in Charlottesville. White nationalist Nazis were out on the streets of America, and they were in a university attacking the universal values of liberalism in Thomas Jefferson's university. And people came out and protested, and that was good. But it also has to be admitted that two things factored into these people coming out into the open. One was the election of Donald Trump, and the other was the fact that Democrats have been playing the identity card, and that has been a kind of recruiting tool for the radical right. And, you know, anyone who plays the identity card had better be prepared to lose the hand, because another group can play it as well. And so somehow we have to get ourselves out of the logic of that.
Forgive me for this naive pie-in-the-sky question, but is it not possible in the concern over our country, the concern over our democracy, that we at some point, hopefully sooner rather than later, we are able to get away from right versus left and focus more on right versus wrong?
Actually, I don't agree with that. I think one of the reasons why things are so unstable right now is that you don't have two clear visions of where the government, you know, the parties and the ideologies want to take the country. And when that is lacking, there's no compass, and everything descends into petty ideological fights. And the American people deserve a choice. They need to know that if I vote for this party and they run on this program, that that's what I'm going to get. And so we need clarity. I mean, democracy depends really on a kind of healthy but dignified partisanship. And the problem is that instead we've got, thanks to especially right-wing media, that we don't have that kind of respectful partisanship, but instead have this kind of game of chicken that goes on between the two sides.
Well, the book is fascinating. It is entitled The Once and Future Liberal After Identity Politics. It is published by Harper. Mark Lilla, thank you very much for being with us.
And thanks for having me.
Great pleasure. Again, the title of the book, The Once and Future Liberal. The book is by Mark Lilla, published by Harper. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.